Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's MilDef briefing on defunding DACA against Texas Lead Challenge. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have an opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touchtone phone. Please note this call may be recorded. I will be standing by should you need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn today's program over to Thomas A. Sein, President and General Counsel of MilDef Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. I am Thomas Sein, President and General Counsel of MilDef. Thank you for joining us today as we provide a briefing about the challenge to the DACA initiative still in federal court in Texas, Texas versus United States, which is currently scheduled for a hearing on motions for summary judgment by both sides on December 22nd. By way of background, of course, DACA is an initiative, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, that was announced by the Obama administration in June of 1982 on the 30th anniversary of the landmark Supreme Court decision in Plyler versus Doe, in which the court determined that undocumented immigrants have the constitutionally protected right to attend a free public school from kindergarten through 12th grade. In this way, DACA was an extension of that important Plyler decision to ensure that those students could then go on to higher education without fear of being removed and would be provided with work authorization. After DACA was announced in 2012, it was initially challenged in court by a number of employees of the Department of Homeland Security and the state of Mississippi. That case was kicked out of court for lack of standing. With that decision, the DACA initiative went unchallenged until December of 2014, when the Obama administration announced a new initiative, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, and an expansion of DACA. The state of Texas and over two dozen other states then challenged the DAPA initiative, had not yet been implemented, and the expansion of DACA that had not yet been implemented. That decision ultimately went to the Supreme Court in 2016, and the 8-justice Supreme Court, one justice short because of the death of Antonin Scalia, deadlocked 4-4. The impact of that decision was to leave in place a Fifth Circuit-approved injunction preventing the DAPA initiative and the expansion of DACA from being implemented. As soon as the Trump administration came into office, President Trump indicated his hostility toward the DACA program, but did not take any action until the state of Texas threatened to sue to stop the DACA initiative from continuing, even though it had already been in place since 2012. In response to that, the Trump administration announced through then Attorney General Jeff Sessions that it would seek to end the DACA program. In response to that announced decision, a number of cases across the country were filed challenging the authority of the Trump administration to eliminate DACA in the way that it had gone about doing that. After those cases were filed and were pending, and after injunctions had been obtained to prevent the Trump administration from moving forward with ending DACA, the state of Texas filed a new lawsuit, like the previous one, this one called Texas versus United States, this one involving a much smaller number of states in comparison to the over two dozen that joined Texas in challenging DAPA. This new case went forward, and despite their expectation of receiving an injunction, the state of Texas sought and was denied an injunction to prevent DACA from moving forward. As you all know, the latest developments in those other cases is that the Supreme Court in June of this year indicated that, in fact, the Trump administration had failed to lawfully eliminate DACA because it had failed to consider certain important elements of the policy and what eliminating the policy would entail. More recently, a federal judge in New York directed the Trump administration not only to continue to take renewals on a 2-year renewal, as previously was the case, but also to accept new DACA applications. In response, the Trump administration has now taken those steps to open up DACA again to new applications and to continue to process renewals for a 2-year renewal period. That's where we stand today, and the eyes of the nation now turned to the Texas federal court where that challenge by Texas and a handful of other states is still pending. We're moving up to a scheduled December 22nd date when motions for summary judgment and the issues involved in those motions will be described in a moment, will be heard by the court. Of course, behind all of this, we know and expect that the new Biden administration, once it takes office on January 20th, 2021, is likely to undertake a new DACA initiative to respond to what has occurred in court and otherwise to ensure that this very positive program, providing protection to so many, over 750,000 students from removal and providing work authorization to them. There is no doubt still work to be done. As an aside, I will note that MALDEF has already sued and continues to sue employers, including some of the biggest corporations in the country, that believe that they have the right to discriminate against work-authorized DACA immigrants, DACA recipients, when it comes to hiring. We have also sued and are continuing to sue financial institutions that similarly believe they have the right to discriminate against DACA recipients in determining whether to provide them with loans. But behind all of this and the expectation that a new administration will address this issue in a more comprehensive way, we have this pending hearing in Texas versus United States. And on that, it's now my pleasure to introduce to you MALDEF's lead counsel. We represent interveners, 22 DACA recipients who intervened to defend DACA because we concluded together that the Trump administration, given its evident hostility to DACA, would not adequately defend constitutionality, legality of the program. Our lead counsel in representing those defendant interveners, the Vice President of Litigation at MALDEF, Nina Perales. Nina.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, everybody, for joining the call today. As Tom mentioned, this is a lawsuit, Texas versus United States, in which Texas is joined by 8 other states for a total of 9 states challenging the legality of DACA. This case, Texas versus U.S., is separate from the other cases around the country that dealt with the Trump administration's attempted rescission of DACA, right? This case does not take up the question whether Trump had the authority to rescind DACA, which is at issue in these other cases that went up to the U.S. Supreme Court. This case is an attack on the underlying legality of DACA itself. And this case seeks a ruling that DACA is unlawful that would bind any future administration. So this case is distinct and it has distinct issues. I want to make one more note about this case, Texas versus the United States, which is that the United States is the defendant in this case. They are supposed to defend the challenged policy, but the administration has refused to defend DACA. And thus, the defense of DACA has fallen to 22 DACA recipients from around the country who stepped forward to intervene in this case to defend DACA. And MALDEF represents those 22 individual DACA recipients. And we are joined in our representation of them by the law firm of Ropes and Gray. And in addition, the state of New Jersey intervened in this case to help defend DACA. As Tom mentioned, this case has been moving along since 2018. Despite the efforts of Texas and the other plaintiff states to push Judge Hainan, who's the judge in this case, into a fast ruling striking down DACA, we've been successful in convincing Judge Hainan that this case ought to move more methodically, and so it's been moving for a little over 2 years. We have now entered what we would call the pretrial stage, so we finished with the exchange of information, that's called discovery, and at this point we would normally have a trial. That would be the next step in the case. But both sides have moved the court to decide this case prior to a trial. We, on the defendant's side, have asked Judge Hainan to dismiss this case for lack of standing. And we have pointed out that the states challenging DACA have failed to show any injury whatsoever as a result of the DACA guidance memo. And it is a fundamental rule of federal litigation that a party that is not injured does not have the right to go to court and challenge something. So we're moving for dismissal for lack of standing. Texas and the other plaintiff states are also moving for judgment without a trial and asking Judge Hainan to find that, to set aside essentially the 2012 DACA memo for three main reasons. First, that the DACA memo should have been accompanied by federal regulation, and it was not, and thus it should be set aside for failure to promulgate regulations. The second argument that the plaintiff states make is that DACA is contrary to law because it allows people to stay in the United States who are otherwise not documented. And then finally, the plaintiff states are arguing that DACA violates the part of the Constitution that authorizes the president or requires the president to uphold federal law. So it's essentially the same argument as the second one. Our arguments, of course, are that DACA is not required to be accompanied by federal regulation, and also that DACA is very consistent with the immigration system established by the Immigration and Nationality Act. As Tom mentioned, we have oral argument coming up on December 22nd on the cross motions for summary judgment. There are at least four possible outcomes from the hearing on the cross motions for summary judgment. We do not expect a ruling on December 22nd. One possible outcome is that the judge decides that the question of DACA's legality requires a trial, and he denies the motions for summary judgment and sets us for trial at some point in the future. Another possible outcome is that the judge agrees with us that the states that are plaintiffs have shown no injury, and he dismisses the case. Another possible outcome is that the judge decides to issue a ruling on DACA's legality, and he holds DACA is lawful. And then the fourth possible outcome is the judge decides DACA's legality, and he rules that DACA is unlawful. I'd like to note in conclusion that the federal government at this point has asked the judge to hold off and allow the federal government to take the time to figure out what to do with DACA. And so the recent filing from the federal government is asking Judge Hainan not to issue a ruling, but to stay his hand for at least the near future while things get sorted out over at DHS. And then finally, it's important to note that even the plaintiff states have not asked, even though they're asking the judge to declare DACA unlawful, they have not asked for an injunction invalidating the grants of DACA that are currently out there and being held by DACA recipients. The plaintiff states have proposed some different alternatives that involve either allowing DACA grants to expire on their own or staying the order completely and waiting for the appeals process. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Nina. It is now my pleasure to introduce a MALDEF board member and a longtime champion of the cause of those who are recipients of DACA, the young immigrants who have contributed so immensely to the development of our country and its economy. She is currently the Director of Advocacy, Development, and Communications for the Dream.us, an extraordinary organization providing scholarship assistance and other services to DACA recipients and other undocumented college students. My great pleasure to introduce Gabby Pacheco. Gabby.
Thank you, Tom. Tom, as you said, I work for the Dream.us, and the Dream.us is the nation's largest college access and success program for immigrant youth, and we have provided scholarships to more than 6,500 Dreamers, 70% of them with DACA. During these past 8 years of the DACA program, we've seen how key and important this program has been, not just to our scholars, but to the entire DACA population. And one example is that we recently did a survey where 2,500 of our scholars told us that their families were going through economic hardships and health insecurities because of what was happening with the pandemic, as their fellow American friends and families were going through as well. But it was having a work authorization, a benefit given by DACA, and their sheer desire to give back to their communities that it helped them during these tough times. And it is so important for me to highlight that more than 200,000 DACA recipients work on the front lines of the nation's COVID-19 response. So we know that on average, DACA recipients arrived to the United States in 1999 at the age of 7, and more than one-third DACA recipients, or 37%, have arrived before the age of 5. For our scholars, the average age is 4. But DACA has allowed undocumented youth not just to find employment in their desired fields, but to seek undergraduate and graduate school as well. And through DACA, young people have been able to feel more secure in their lives, and many have gone on to build families, buy homes, buy cars, and accomplish their American dream. 2,554,000 U.S.-born children have at least one parent who hold DACA. And across the country, 1.5 million people live with DACA recipients. DACA recipients own 56,000 homes. They pay $566.9 million per year in mortgages, and while other beneficiaries pay $2.3 billion in rental and payments each year. DACA recipients and their household pay $8.7 billion in federal tax and local taxes each year. And this is on top of the Social Security and Medicare funds through their payroll taxes contributions. After taxes, DACA recipients and their households have a combined $24 billion in spending power. Personally, DACA allowed me the opportunity to buy a home, to live my life, and to find my desired dream job, which is working at the Dream.us. And I want to say that DACA helped me and has helped a lot of us spread our wings a little bit wider. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Gabby. And our final speaker before we take questions is one of the courageous interveners in this case. In all of our civil rights cases, MALDEF depends on the courage of those who have been affected, stepping forward, having their names used in court, and standing to defend important legal principles. In this case, as I mentioned, we have the honor of representing 22 recipients of DACA. Today we have one of those interveners with us, recipient of DACA, who has stepped forward to be represented in court to defend the legality of the important DACA initiative. It's my great pleasure to introduce Jin K. Park. Jin.
Hi, thank you so much, Tom, Nina, and Gabby. My name's Jin. I'm 24 years old, and I'm currently a medical student at Harvard Medical School, and I was part of the litigation with MALDEF since 2018, and I decided with, as Tom was mentioning, 21 other DACA recipients because, I think for the past couple of years, we've all kind of noticed that DACA recipients have kind of been left at the altar, so to speak, many times, right? And we've kind of experienced a lot of, it's been a roller coaster ride throughout all three branches of government. And I think over the years, I've realized that I wanted to be a part of the litigation because I wanted to do my part. I wanted to tell my story and have my day in court in terms that I think on our own terms, because I think a lot of times it's difficult through the news cycle, throughout the political process, to really feel that that our interests are really being kind of represented on our own terms. And so I'm really thankful for MALDEF. I'm thankful for Tom, Nina, and all the advocates doing work to make sure that we have our day in court. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jin. Thank you all for joining us. We will now take questions. I simply want to emphasize what Nina said about the possible outcomes. The most likely outcome, regardless of the outcome, the most likely occurrence is there will not be an immediate order requiring DACA to cease, even if Judge Hainan concludes that the state plaintiff states have the right to be in court and that they are correct in their contentions that DACA is unlawful. Everyone seems to agree there needs to be further consideration about what to do if that is the outcome after, sometime after, the arguments which are currently scheduled for December 22nd. Operator, we will now open to questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. You may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Once again, that is star and one to ask a question. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. We'll take our first question from Norman Merchant with the Associated Press. Your line is now open.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my question. How does the incoming Biden administration affect this case, if at all?
Thank you. That's a great question. So we all do expect a new administration on January 20th, and we expect that administration to review DACA and to look to ensure that it continues in its most appropriate form. Those are certainly discussions we expect the Biden administration to be having. If the Biden administration came in and announced a new form of DACA, a new kind of DACA, that could require this case to go back to further discovery, further briefing about the legality of whatever new initiative, which may be DACA Plus or have an entirely different name, might be announced and implemented by the administration. That's why this is such a critical point as we wait for the new administration for DACA to continue in its current form until we see what the policy and practice of the new administration might be. Next question.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. We will take our next question from Maria Mendez with Texas Public Radio. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Could you talk a little bit more about the long-lasting impact of, you know, if the judge rules that DACA is unlawful and sides with the states, would that have a bigger impact than some of these past cases we've seen?
So I want to first, I'll begin and then I'll turn to the others, but I want to begin by pointing out that the claims put forward by the plaintiff states vary. So one of their claims is a failure to comply with the Administrative Procedures Act. Now that is a failing, if it is in fact a failing, we contend that it is not and it was not required, that could be fixed, if you will. Even the other claims put forward by the plaintiff states relating to the legality of DACA, depending on the specifics of that, and more importantly, not just what Judge Hainan says on that, but what courts that review his decision might say, that could determine what is the freedom of the Biden administration to implement a program, an initiative like DACA. That's why, as I mentioned, the change in administration is so critical. It is important for me to note that deferred action itself has long existed under our laws, and presidents of both parties have over decades engaged in providing deferred action and work authorization that goes with deferred action. That's why we believe that this is a lawful exercise of the president's executive discretion, prosecutorial discretion in the context of the 21st century. So we believe that ultimately a DACA initiative, a DACA-like initiative, will move forward to continue to protect the 750,000 recipients in the past and potentially many more who have been barred from applying for DACA because of the now several years time that the Trump administration refused to accept new applications. But let me turn to Nina Gotti or Jen to see if they'd like to add.
This is Nina. I have just a very short follow-up to that, which is to point out and to emphasize that nobody in this case is asking Judge Hanen to cancel the DACA grants and the work authorization of current DACA recipients. Nobody in this case is asking for that right now. Not the plaintiff states, not the federal government, and certainly not us. So in terms of how the potential outcome of this summary judgment argument is portrayed, I would want to emphasize that nobody is asking the judge to do that. At most, what the plaintiff states are asking for is a legal ruling, and then I think to serve as some kind of indicator or guide for the Biden administration. And we disagree with their legal position, but the plaintiffs are not asking to cancel EADs and DACA grants right now for DACA recipients. Thanks.
Gadi or Jin?
So this is Gabby, and what I would like to say is that one of the things that I appreciated that Judge Hanen had said before, and I'm going to paraphrase what he said, but he talked about, you cannot unscramble once an egg has been scrambled. And our lives as immigrant youth and people with the current people that have DACA, they have been living life in limbo. And this is taking a toll in not just the mental health of all those people that are having to deal with the day-to-day cases that are being brought up. In our opinion, without, any actual, like Tom was saying, there's no need for these cases to be brought up. There's no legal basis. And so for the young people who are having to be toyed around from court case to court case, this is taking a toll on their lives. And like I had mentioned, not only are they their own individuals having DACA, but they live in units of families and communities, and they have children, and they own homes, and they work, and they are part of our everyday lives. Over 200,000 of them are in the front lines as healthcare workers helping us through this pandemic. And so what I would say is that, hopefully the judge throws out this case, finds that, there is nothing for the states to bring forward, and DACA recipients can continue to fight and live their lives as they've been living, and fight so that the Biden-Harris administration finally comes up with a more permanent solution, which would be the best case scenario in this case.
And just this is Jin, just to add to what Gabby was saying, just really to motivate what Gabby was saying, I'm a medical student, and starting in January, I'm about to go into the hospital as part of the clinical team as a medical student. Regardless of what happens with our case with the new administration, DACA recipients, we're still going to be here. We're going to be here, doing our part, whether in the medical field or otherwise, because we are American. We're part of the society, we really just hope that our laws really just catch up to that, to really see us as free and equal co-citizens. And so regardless of what happens, we'll be here to play our part.
Thank you, Jen. And I would just add that we would all suffer in the United States if we fail to continue to protect and permit to work all of these many young immigrants who are making these extraordinary contributions. As Jen was describing, he'll be on the front lines providing medical care starting in January as a medical student. And he is just one example of so many hundreds of thousands of others who are making really critical contributions in this very troubling year to the benefit of every person residing in the United States. And the last thing I will say is to remind us all that the majority of the U.S. Supreme Court in June of this very year did point out the important reliance interests that the Trump administration failed to consider or address in its precipitous decision to attempt to end DACA. They pointed out that so many of these young people have made decisions like the decision to go to medical school, decisions like the decision to go to law school, decisions like the decision to continue their education and to be employed in some of our most important industries. These reliance interests are really not interests solely of the recipients of DACA themselves, but really for the entire country. And the Supreme Court majority faulted the Trump administration for failing to consider and take account of those important reliance interests. That, too, is behind all of the decision-making that will occur, whether by Judge Hainan or by the incoming Biden administration. Next question, please.
Yes, we'll take our next question from Margaret Crero with KNX. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the questions. I was hoping that Jim, being one of the interveners, could just share a little bit of his story.
Yeah, hi. Thanks so much for the question. I'm currently a medical student. My parents and I moved to the U.S. from South Korea after the East Asian financial crisis when I was seven. And we've been living in New York City ever since. And I've always kind of known that I was undocumented. And there are conversations you have with your parents about, you know, what not to do, talking about travel, talking about, or fooling around next to police. And so these are conversations that I've always kind of been in my mind. And growing up, I also wanted to always contribute. I really did and still do want to do my part. You know, I consider myself a part of this society, and I, really value what it says about us, what it says about, our status as free and equal co-citizens. And I really want to just do my part to make sure that we can really achieve that America, right? We really look at each other in the eyes and really call ourselves equal. And so I'm just kind of doing my part, which is to, you know, be a medical student. And so, and eventually I'm hoping to just take care of patients in my community. But, you know, the other DACA recipients in this lawsuit, they're all doing the same. We're all kind of doing our part. We're all chipping in. And so I'm just really thankful for all the advocates.
Thank you, Jen. And thanks for your willingness to share your story, and congratulations. And thank you for all that you're doing in medical.
And Tom?
Yes.
This is Gabby, and Jen is being extremely humble here, and I appreciate that so much about Jen and other documented individuals and undocumented youth. One thing that Jen forgot to mention, which might be also something painful to share, but Jen was the first Rhodes Scholar, documented Rhodes Scholar, and he was unfortunately not able to travel with his cohort abroad because of being documented. But I just wanted to share that as well, because, you know, we have extremely bright, willing, and young people who are persevering regardless of what is happening in this country. And I think for all of us, it's important for us to recognize that, you know, these are human beings at the end of the day, but human beings that have so much potential and desire to finally be recognized as Americans.
Thank you, Gabby. Next question, please.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, that is star and one on your touchtone phone. We'll pause for one more moment to allow questions to queue. It appears we have no further questions at this time. I will turn the call back over to our presenters for any additional or closing remarks.
Great. Thank you all again for joining us. And I want to again thank Nina Perales, Gabby Pacheco, and Jen Park for their contributions this morning and for their ongoing contributions as advocates and as public servants. And I want to thank you all for your attention to this very important issue. We are in extraordinary times, not just because of an unprecedented pandemic, but because of a historic presidential transition that will have important impacts on the issue discussed today. We look forward to following up with all of you as we learn more, including following the currently scheduled December 22nd hearing in Texas versus United States. Have a wonderful day.